my friends. It's Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your Red State refugee. And welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. We got a great show for you today. We're going to follow up on the WTF Chuck Schumer story and his recent tour to the morning shows to defend his decision to leave Democrats high and dry, to betray the House Democrats and support the Musk Doge continuing resolution. We've also got some judges who are fighting back. Nice to see some fight somewhere in America. Some judges fighting back against the Trump administration. We'll tell you about the most recent decisions. Then we've got the devastation being wrought just not in the United States, but worldwide by this maladministration. RFK Jr. is saying, hey, just let the bird flu spread. We can see how which birds will be immune. Just let it spread. Oh, that and the thing going on in Vietnam with Agent Orange and Ukraine with the kidnapped children. We'll talk all about that. In my regular Boycott Idaho segment, we're going to look at how Idaho says, F the homeless, to hell with people without houses, go move to some other state. That's coming up. And in the Radical Rant, a look at how the Trump maladministration is trying to whitewash American history by erasing the Tuskegee Airmen, Jackie Robinson, and so many more. That's all coming up on the Radical Rush Show. Also wanted to make just a quick note of what's happening with the Teslas. There's been some vandalism going on in France, in Vegas, and Elon Musk is out crying about this. Boo-hoo, why does everybody hate me? Why does everybody hate me? Well, look, dude, nobody's out there torching the Rivians or the Ionics or any of these other companies that are making electric vehicles. Do you think maybe your politics have something to do with it? I'm not here to defend this, but I'm also not going to condemn it. The thing that is that you think that you're some sort of tragic hero, that you're under attack. And in fact, one of his quotes here, I think it was, he said, why do people want to kill me? I think was the quote. Let me see. Yes. People want to kill me because I'm stopping their fraud and bad people will do bad things. And that's why you always see him with that little kid of his, little X, on his shoulders. He's using the kid as a human shield. It's absolutely despicable. And Elon Musk, you got what's coming to you here, buddy. Glad to see your Tesla shares continuing to fall. And this is one of the best bits of self-organization that I've seen in the United States in a while, as far as trying to do some sort of political movement. The people that are out there protesting the Tesla dealerships, good on you for that. We need to make this brand, the swastika, make it something that is just not acceptable in polite company. You see someone driving a Tesla, you've got to question their ethics, question their morals. And, you know, I feel bad for people who got into the Teslas early on for wanting to support electric vehicles. But guys, there's a lot better electric vehicles out there. I've been reading some of the stats on this, some of the new models that they're getting up to a 600 mile range on the battery. They're starting to get the charging times down to where it's almost equivalent to the time it takes to fill a tank of gas. And that's really the magic there. You get that down where being able to refuel is as quick or quicker than gassing up. That's when people are really going to start adopting the EVs. And the other technology I saw that just blew my mind, and I don't know how you do this on a mass scale with, you know, multiple different types of vehicles, but a system where you drive your electric vehicle into a bay, it raises your car up, pulls the battery, the depleted battery, out of your car, and puts a brand new, fresh battery in your car, and you take off, takes like 9-10 seconds. So it's like faster than gassing up your car. Now, you'd have to have kind of a standard build of where the batteries were and a standard type of battery and a standard way of inserting it and taking it out. So I don't know how you do that with the multiple car manufacturers. Lord knows it's taking us forever just to get phone manufacturers to make the same kind of plug in for their batteries. But hey, anything that can get the electric cars working better and put Tesla out of business, the better. Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate Democrats, is out on tour. No, not his book tour. He had to cancel his book tour because, you know, his constituents might show up and criticize him. And he mentioned their security concerns. Oh, no, security concerns, as if they were going to harm him in some way. Lending credence to all the right wingers who are complaining about their town hall meetings. Say, even the Democrats are afraid. Every move Chuck makes just betrays the Democratic base. So he went out on tour, not on a book tour, but to the morning talk shows like The View and CBS This Morning, defending his decision to end the filibuster and pulled eight other Democrats and one independent with him to go ahead and vote for cloture, 62-38. So the debate would end and the continuing resolution would pass, be signed into law by Trump. And now Doge and Elon Musk have statutory authority. They've got a blank check. And the best part of this from Elon Musk's point of view, in that continuing resolution, Congress cannot oversee what Doge is doing. I'll say that again. Congress just gave away its power of oversight over anything that Elon Musk and his team of incels are doing with our data, with our money, with our federal programs, with our benefits. There can be no auditing, no calling into hearings. He's got a blank check to just go about remaking the government or destroying the government in any way he chooses. So Schumer's on the shows defending this. On The View, he was defending it pretty strongly, saying they were promising that if we did a shutdown, that we would be in a shutdown for 6 months, for 9 months, for a year. And the only people who would be able to get us out of the shutdown are Trump and Musk. And if they didn't get us out, they would just destroy the whole government. Okay, and that would be different than what they're doing now. How? How would that be different now that you've given them the power in Doge to destroy the federal government without any oversight from the Congress? How would it be any different? And Chuck, to believe the threat, right? I want to play poker with these guys, with Fetterman, with Chuck Schumer. Oh, they threatened to keep us shut down for a year. That must be true. Call their bluff for once. People would understand a government shutdown when the government is being run completely by Republicans. They own the House. They own the Senate. They own the White House. They own the Supreme Court. Everything is being run by Republicans. So if the government shuts down, the Republicans would get the entire blame for this. But now that you've gone ahead with the continuing resolution and Doge is officially sanctioned to do whatever it's doing, now it's just a government thing that's happening. Now it's just a government thing that the Democrats can be said went along with, that the Democrats helped to enable. This is the Enabling Act. This is the Enabling Act. If you're following along from your script from the late 30s, early 40s, mid-European history, this is the part of the script where the Enabling Acts are passed, where the government goes ahead and gives the fascist dictator all the tools he needs to move ahead with the fascism. So Schumer's on these shows, and I wanted to play this one clip real quick that just highlights the deep rot within the Democratic Party, especially among the septuagenarians and octogenarians. The people born before Kennedy's assassination still feel this way.
Look, the bottom line is there were a whole lot of Democrats who were torn. And they on the one hand, people were clamoring, do something now, do something now. Now, do we have to act and do we have to fight these Republicans, this right wing group,
the MAGA,
not all Republicans, every step of the way? But do it in the smartest way possible.
Not all Republicans. Let me make sure to give you an out, Republican voters out there who helped this fascism come to light. All you Republicans out there in your red states and in your districts. No. You didn't enable fascism. You didn't enable the next Hitler. No. It was those MAGA far-right extremists. You other Republicans are good people and we can work with you. That's the failure of leadership of Chuck Schumer. The failure to understand There are no good Republicans left. The fact that they have nominated three times in a row a Russian asset, the fact that they confirmed people like Tulsi Gabbard and Kash Patel and Pete Hegseth, proves there are no good Republicans. None of them stood up to any of them. They are all marching in lockstep, in goose step with their Führer. Well, you know, we of course we need to defeat these Nazis. You know, not all the Nazis, not the good Nazis. We just need to defeat the extremist Nazis. That's the way it comes off, Chuck. And the things he had on the CBS This Morning. He's got Gayle King there interviewing him. And he had this to say.
I am the best at keep winning Senate seats. I've done it in 2005. Just in 2020, no one thought we'd take back the Senate. Under my leadership, we took it. So
I am the best at winning Senate seats, says the Senate minority leader. Let's ask Sherrod Brown how good you are at winning seats. Let's ask John Tester how good you are at winning seats. God, there was another one. I forgot the other one that lost recently. Tester, Sherrod Brown. There was another one. Anyway, so much for winning seats.
Whoa. Hey, back in 2005, did you see what a bang-up job I did 20 years ago winning seats?
It's time to Chuck Schumer. What the fuck, Chuck? Trying to defend this is absolutely indefensible. There seems to be some beginnings of pushback from our federal judiciary against this Trump maladministration. Of course, the story we were covering yesterday having to do with the flights that were ordered to be turned back from El Salvador, filled with Venezuelan migrants, which now the reports are out that, guess what? I guess all of them weren't terribly evil gangbanger, drug dealer, terrorist types. What do you know? Just picking people out based on brown skin and tattoos doesn't necessarily mean that they're members of Trenda Aruga or whatever the hell the name is of that gang. Oh, what do you know? Yeah, the families have been reporting, you know, I think it's four that have reported so far that our loved one that just got deported to El Salvador to this brutal prison isn't in any gang, isn't any sort of criminal. A regular family member, contributing member of society type person who just happened to get caught up in this dragnet of looking for the evil brown people to deport. So the judge called the government witnesses up to say, hey, you know, I gave this order for you to turn the planes around and you didn't turn the planes around. What's up with that? The administration trying to defend that by saying, that was just a verbal order. By the time you put out the written order, they were already gone. It was already too late. As if a judge's verbal order doesn't mean anything. Try that the next time you're in court. Try to disobey a judge's verbal order. See how that gets you. And in response to this judge blocking this, of course, the Stephen Millers and the mouthpieces of the administration, you're trying to help the terrorists. These are the most evil people, the criminals that would kill and rape and murder. How could you not want to send them away to El Salvador? Well, first of all, if they're such terrible, evil people, why don't you just give them a trial? Why don't you put them in front of a judge? Why don't you convict them of something? And then why don't you just let our prisons in America handle it? Why do we got to send them off to El Salvador? It's not like we haven't got brutal prisons in America. Could it be that you just want to keep them far away from being able to have access to their families and lawyers and the media? I think that's what's going on there. So Trump was all upset about this, called for the impeachment of this judge. And we've heard talk like this from others in the administration. How can one unelected judge thwart the will of the great God King Emperor Felon the First Trump, who won 2,500 counties and so much popular vote, he was given a clear mandate, even though it was the lowest electoral victory
you know, of the century, but still, how could you deny his mandate? They're all wailing and gnashing their teeth. And Trump got all upset and said that, you know, these judges need to be impeached. And this actually brought about a rare rebuke from Chief Justice John Roberts, who warned about the politicization of the judiciary and talked about how there's an appellate process if you disagree with the rulings of a judge. Oh my, John. Did you think maybe it's a bad idea to give this guy the type of immunity you ruled for him a while back, saying that all his official acts couldn't be criminally prosecuted? Do you think maybe that helps set in motion what we're dealing with here? The legacy of John Roberts is going to be the absolute lack of trust in the institution of our Supreme Court, trying so desperately now to clean it up a little bit. But other judges have been stepping up. There have been a trio of rulings that took the wind out of the sails of the Trump maladministration a bit. First of all, we had a ruling from, Judge Theodore Chang, who was appointed by former President Barack Obama, said that the cuts to U.S. aid, the U.S. Agency for International Development, quote, likely violated the United States Constitution in multiple ways. Now, USAID is the program we have for delivering food and medicines and help to foreign countries. It's a projection of what we call soft power. It's a way that we show that we care for the world, that we help the world, that we get them to like us by, you know, trying to eradicate malaria in you know, jungles and saving kids' lives and keeping kids from going blind and sending food assistance and, you know, nice things that we help out in the rest of the world. And of course, DOGE has been cutting the hell out of that because they don't want to give any money to anybody for anything. Chang rebuked Musk for violating Congress's authority to appropriate funds and to create or shut down agencies, specifically citing the Appointments Clause of the Constitution. That is, that the Constitution grants Congress the right to do this stuff, not an unelected South African apartheid Nepo baby sent a billionaire. Another decision that came down, this was from Judge Anna C. Reyes, a preliminary injunction against the Trump administration trying to ban transgender troops from serving in the U.S. military. Now, Reyes pushed back strongly against the administration that was trying to say that transgender life, transgender identity, was incompatible with the honor and integrity and the values of serving in the military. That basically they were trying to say transgender people are living a lie and you can't have liars in the military. She wrote, quote, "The cruel irony is that thousands of transgender service members have sacrificed, some risking their lives, to ensure for others the very equal protection rights the military ban seeks to deny them." So for now, transgender soldiers and other service members are still allowed to serve and should be. There are only an estimated 4,240 active duty service members out of the 1.3 million military service personnel. Now, some say that that number could be higher, but we are talking about a less than 1% type of number. Maybe as high as 14,000, according to the Palm Center, which is a research institute that advocates for LGBTQ plus people in the military. The executive order described transgender identity as harmful to military readiness, writing that, quote, "The armed forces have been afflicted with radical gender ideology to appease activists unconcerned with the requirements of military service, like physical and mental health, selflessness, and unit cohesion." Now, this, on its face, does it make any sense to you to want to ban transgender service people? Like, there's maybe a tiny sliver of logic if the military were all male, right? Like if the military were all male and there was a woman who transitioned to a man And then they could say, oh, well, look, you know, you have to be so strong. You have to be able to lift this much and you have to run this fast and you can't do that. But even that doesn't make sense because there'd be a lot of people that didn't pass that standard as cisgender men. So there's no logic behind this at all, especially when we have an integrated military with males and females serving. Like, you're saying a man couldn't be let's say, combat engineer. A man can be a combat engineer, or a woman could be a combat engineer, but someone who was born a woman and then becomes a man can't be a combat engineer? Or someone who was born a man and becomes a woman can't be? Like, it doesn't make sense. If you're saying a transgender person can't serve, then you're saying a person of that sex can't serve. If you're saying transgender women can't serve in the military, then you're saying all women can't serve in the military. There's something about being a woman that prevents you from serving. So that's good news. And the third judge was a familiar name to us, Judge Tanya Chutkan, from one of the Trump felony cases. She blocked the Trump administration from terminating $14 billion in grants. These are EPA grant money to three climate groups, saying that the government's vague and unsubstantiated assertions of fraud are insufficient. And again, the Doge people, you know, they think fraud, waste, and abuse is spending money on stuff we don't like. That's fraud, waste, and abuse. No. Fraud is a crime. There's an actual crime called fraud. You can gather evidence of fraud and you can take it before a judge and you can charge them with a crime. They're not doing that. Notice nobody's been charged in any of these frauds. The Doge guys, oh, we uncovered this many billions in fraud. Gee, there ought to be a whole lot of criminal charges from that. Nope. Tanya Chutkan is protecting this grant program now. It's $14 billion in grants awarded to three climate groups. The total being held is $20 billion being held by Citibank. And Judge Chutkan also blocked Citibank from being able to transfer that money to the government or to anyone else. So basically, grant money is just frozen at Citibank and not taken from the three groups that need it. Chutkan wrote, quote, "At this juncture, EPA's defendants have not sufficiently explained why unilaterally terminating plaintiffs' grant awards was a rational precursor to reviewing the program." So we got three judges in one day fighting back against the Trump maladministration. Let's hope this wave continues. As we're living through the decimation of American democracy and our descent into fascism, it's important that we recall that it's not just here that this is harming. This is harming our entire planet. This fascist administration is a danger to life on Earth as we know it. First story along this line is Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our Secretary of Health and Human Services and anti-vax wacko. He has suggested, with respect to this bird flu that is already having an effect on the economics of eggs. Remember that? Remember when that was important? The price of eggs? We were also concerned about how expensive eggs were. And now they're like $8 for a dozen. And suddenly nobody's that concerned about the price of eggs anymore. Anyway, it's having a problem with considering the price of eggs, the shortage, the massive avian farms that are being ravaged by this H5N1 bird flu. Now, normally, in normal circumstances, we'd have a Health and Human Services director working to stop the spread of this deadly disease, you know, maybe before it gets to millions and millions of other birds and mutates into a more lethal form, a more airborne form, a more communicable form, a more deadly form, one that can transfer easily to humans and wipe out tens of thousands or hundreds or maybe millions of us like COVID. Yeah, that's what we'd normally do. Normally, we'd want to stop a thing like bird flu. Most administrations would think that's a what we call a bad thing, but not RFK. RFK has suggested that we should allow the virus to spread. We should allow the virus to spread through our flocks of egg-laying hens, so that we can find the birds
that are immune. Yes, we'll find the 1 out of 10 birds in the million bird poultry farm. We'll find the 10 or 20 or 30 of them that survive, and they'll be special birds. And from those special birds, we can learn how to fight the bird flu, and maybe we can breed those special birds that are resistant to the bird flu, and we won't have to worry about the bird flu anymore. Never mind that we'll have wiped out 90% of the flocks. Never mind that we'll have evolved this virus into mutated forms that can kill many, many, many more people. Forget that. We got to let it spread. You know, like measles. We got to let it spread. Build up our natural immunities, you know, by killing all of us who don't have it. That's our Secretary of Health and Human Services. The ecological devastation that could be wrought by this administration, we're only beginning to understand. Now, big picture, of course, climate change that is going to be erased. Just the mention of it is being erased, killing our national atmospheric and oceanic, you know, our weather predicting, stopping research into these things. That's the goal here, is we don't talk about it. We don't know it exists. Therefore, it can't hurt us because we don't know it exists. Oh, what? Whole neighborhood died from what? Bird flu. Yeah, it's going to get bad, folks. The next, the other story on this that blows my mind is part of what we're doing with USAID is cleaning up Agent Orange. We had lots of Agent Orange that left behind after the Vietnam War, polluting that country, and we've been engaged in environmental cleanup there for years. But again, Trump trying to stop USAID from cleaning that up would be a public relations disaster. And they're stopping this cleanup right before the rainy season with the torrential downpours you get, the monsoons you get out there in Vietnam. And so this dioxin, this Agent Orange, that's still in the soil from us trying to defoliate the jungles during the Vietnam War, 50 years later, 60 years later in some cases, that harmful chemical still in the soil, and we don't clean it up. The rains come, washes down into their food supply, poisoning it, and then into the rivers, down to Ho Chi Minh City, a city of 9 million people. An environmental and life-threatening catastrophe. So Secretary of State Lil Marco Rubio have not only ordered the work to stop, but they have frozen $1 million in payments for work that's already been completed by the contractors we hired. Well, that's right up along the lines of the Trump administration, right? That's right up in Trump's wheelhouse, huh? Hire a bunch of contractors, then stiff them. How perfect. And this, you know, all the damage that's being done now, compound that by the fact that years from now, when we start new projects, when we try new diplomatic efforts, who's going to trust us? What countries are going to trust us after this? I mean, I can imagine being a foreign country and seeing us elect Trump the first time and going, oh, okay, you know, democracies are funny that way. Propaganda works weird. But surely they'll learn their lesson that we elected him a second time completely erodes any of the trust that the world could have for our political system. To elect this guy a second time is just unforgivable. And a third story with respect to how this Trump maladministration is destroying our soft power, our credibility as the good country, is in the Trump administration ending the tracking of kidnapped Ukrainian children in Russia. That's right. Since the start of this war of aggression by Russia into the sovereign democratic nation of Ukraine, one of the war crimes that's been occurring
is the Russians kidnapping Ukrainian children and adopting them out to Russians, stealing these kids and repatriating them to the enemy's country. And that is a war crime. That's one of the definitions of war crime. To try to genocide a people by retraining and reorienting their kids. Something we did to the Native Americans with the boarding schools. Teach our English to their young, as Paul Revere and the Raiders once sang. So these thousands of Ukrainian children have been kidnapped. The United States has been putting together a database of it, trying to help Ukrainian families find their kids, put their families back together. And Secretary of State Marco Rubio has ended that. Ended the tracking of the kidnapped Ukrainian children. You know, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who was approved 99-0 in his Senate confirmation, the one who was approved by every single Democrat, that guy. Yeah. Ending the tracking of kidnapped Ukrainian children. All right, now it's time for our regular segment on Boycott Idaho, why you should avoid the handmade state, and in particular, boycott the Idaho potato. No product is more directly associated with a single red state than Idaho and the potato. They brag about it on their license plates. They have a college bowl game for it. The famous Idaho Potato Bowl. So boycott the Idaho potato. And just to be sure, boycott all potatoes. But if you really, really got to have a potato, you can find out where it came from, right? The bags in the grocery store will tell you. There are some great potatoes coming out of Washington and Oregon. If you're up here in the Northwest, get some of them. Maine, I understand, makes some really good potatoes. But boycott Idaho. Let's let these red states start to feel the pressure of their support for fascism. And today's little bit of fascism coming out of the handmade state has to do with people lacking housing, or as they are sometimes called, homeless people, although I prefer people lacking housing. There is a report just came out showing that Idaho has a terrible problem with housing, that one out of three people don't have the funds necessary to be able to survive. A new report is out from the Idaho Asset Building Network and the National Low Income Housing Coalition. And what they're showing is there's only one affordable home for every three low-income households. So three families need a place to live. There's only one place they can find that they can afford. Nearly one in two renter households are cost burdened. That means half the people renting out there are spending more than 30% of their income for rent. Of course, the problem is the greatest in rural areas where job opportunities are scarce and housing is scarcer. Kendra Knighton, the policy director for the IABN, said, quote, "Idahoans across the state are feeling the squeeze of high rents and a lack of affordable homes across the state. Whether you're in Ada County or Clark County, rent is taking up a growing share of household income, leaving families struggling to get by. If we don't act now, we risk losing the very people who make our communities strong, like our teachers, nurses, service workers, and young families who simply can't afford to stay." So, Idaho has a terrible problem with affordable housing. What are the Idaho legislators doing about this terrible problem? Well, first of all, this was back in, let me get the date on this, last year, Idaho passed a bill, their Idaho legislature passed a bill, HB 545, that ends Section 8 housing vouchers. Section 8 housing vouchers. These are the vouchers you get from the feds, kind of a welfare program where if you can't afford housing, you get money. You get this voucher that you can use to pay your rent. Well, this bill made it so that the landlords don't have to accept those vouchers anymore. So poor people, you can discriminate against them. They show up with a Section 8 housing voucher. You don't have to accept it. Also, that bill
banned any sort of rent control. That report was just telling us that the rent is too damn high for half the renters out there. Tough nuggets. There can be no rent control. This is all, of course, because the landlords, the property owners, the capitalists lobby their Republican legislatures to say, oh, we don't want to take Section 8 housing vouchers. Those are poor people. Oh, we don't want to have rent control. You're restricting how much money we could make. So it's all about the Benjamins and not about the people named Benjamin that need a place to live. Another thing that happened, this was last year. Again, we're talking about a place where there's too few cheap places to live. There was a story coming out of Meridian, Idaho, and to understand Idaho, Idaho is mostly rural, and the three big cities in Idaho are all in one place. Boise, Meridian, and Nampa. Boise's like 220,000, Meridian's 150, 130, Nampa's 100, right? And it's all one big metro area, which, by the way, is about the size of Gaza. Yeah, the Boise metro area is about the size of Gaza, one-fifth the population, but geographically, about the same square mileage and about the same shape, long and skinny kind of thing. Anyway, Meridian's in the middle, and this woman bought a tiny house, okay? And you know what I'm talking about. The tiny houses are on wheels. It's not a trailer, though, not an RV, right? It's just a house that's on wheels that you can move somewhere, but it's a tiny house, okay? So she bought this tiny house and parked it next to a house owned by a friend of hers who agreed to rent part of his property to her. It's like, hey, you want to set your tiny house here on in my driveway? I don't know if it was a driveway, but wherever, next to the house. Go ahead, I'll charge you X amount of rent per month. That's when the Meridian police showed up and informed them that living in homes on wheels is against city law. That's right. You can't live in a tiny house in city law because Meridian has what's called a unified ownership requirement, which would require the owner of the house to also own the secondary unit on the property. You follow? If Robert, the property owner, the guy, the friend who wanted to rent the space to his friend, if the guy who owns the property also owned the tiny house, he could rent that out to her. But since she owns the tiny house, he can't rent a space to her on his property. Why? Like, because he doesn't own the tiny house, it can't sit there? Someone else can't own the house that she's living in? She can't own the own house she's living in? He can't rent part of his space to someone else? Yep, that's Idaho. And that was just last year. Those were the couple of things they did last year to try to stop people with little money from being able to have homes. But now they've gone farther. Because now there are two bills out that have been emboldened by a decision right here in the state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. There was a court case that went before the Supreme Court called Johnson versus Grants Pass. And Grants Pass is the city that's closest to me right now. It's in Josephine County, Oregon. It's about 45,000 people. And it's the gateway to the Redwoods, if you need to know. You want to go through the Redwood National Forest, you go through Grants Pass, you know, I-5, and you take 199 down Grants Pass, and then it's beautiful. It's a wonderful, beautiful drive. But Grants Pass has hated homeless people, people without homes, for a while. And before this decision, people could set up tents in public parks. And the Supreme Court, up to then, had ruled, look, you can't lock someone up for just existing. People got to sleep somewhere. And if you're not going to give them a place to sleep, if you're not going to give them a homeless shelter, you can't just arrest them. Well, that's not the case anymore. The Johnson versus Grants Pass decision now allows cities to just lock people up, just arrest them for vagrancy, trespassing, whatever the excuse is, but allows you to lock people up because they don't have a home, because they're sleeping outside. Now, the people who support this kind of stuff say, well, look, these people have places to go. They just don't want to follow the rules. And then this is where they're usually talking about a some sort of religious organization that sets up a shelter. But to be in that shelter, you can't drink, you can't smoke, you have to be in by 9 o'clock, and you have to go to their religious service. And I get why some people think, well, what's the problem with that? Why don't you do that? Well, I feel that compelling someone to worship your God as a condition of having a place to live and sleep violates not just the Constitution, but basic morality. And the irony of Christian religions that would refuse to give you shelter if you don't worship their Christian religion. That's ironic as hell to me. But because of that decision, now cities are free to go ahead and find ways to ban homeless people. It's actually a bit in the air here in Grants Pass, just to fill you in a little bit more. There's been a couple of injunctions, and there are some tents going up in some of the parks now because of these injunctions, because the judge has found that the city hasn't exactly complied. I don't know all the full details, but they're putting up some of the encampments. There's a lot that's right next to the Grants Pass Police Department where they set up a chain link fence. And there's, I don't know, a dozen and a half tents in there. But Idaho is moving forward with ways to criminalize the homeless. There are two bills. The first one, SB 1166, will prohibit the establishment of any homeless shelter in any city larger than 100,000 people if that shelter is within 300 feet of where people with homes live. And remember, we're talking only the only cities over 100,000 in Idaho are Boise, Meridian, and Nampa, so the Treasure Valley area. You will not allow to live there without a home. And there can be no homeless shelters within 300 feet of where people with homes live. The problem with this is endangering the ongoing construction of a shelter at the old Salvation Army warehouse on State Street, which is a big five-lane boulevard that's mostly strip mall commercial-type properties. But one block behind that, there are residential neighborhoods. And, of course, the NIMBYs are out in force. Not in my backyard. The NIMBYs are out in force complaining, oh, I can't have a homeless shelter here. So not only are they not going to be able to find places to build homeless shelters, there's another ban coming up in this bill, SB 1141, that will ban sleeping and camping on any public properties in large cities. So effectively, making any sort of tent encampments illegal. These two bills together are going to make it impossible to exist outside if you have no home, and make it impossible for those who'd provide you some shelter any place to house you. Now, the proponents of these bills make the usual complaints about, oh, the neighborhood quality of life, the sanitary conditions, and the crime associated with people who lack housing. And again, I have some sympathy here. When I lived in Portland, Oregon, my partner and I ran a bed and breakfast. It was in the middle of a southeast Portland neighborhood that was a very nice little neighborhood. And over the next 5 years, that neighborhood went to hell. We had cars, people sleeping in cars down the block. We'd have needles and shit in the gutters from people. We'd have garbage strewn about. People who parked their cars at our bed and breakfast would get their cars broken into. So I get it. I get it. I get why neighbors and neighborhoods have this fear. But trying to push it under the rug makes it worse. Trying to make people without homes invisible makes it worse. Trying to put more financial stress upon them makes it worse. The invisible homeless problem will be far worse than the visible homeless problem. And if you've got this problem, then why are you allowing the legislature to ban Section 8, from ban rent controls, not let people live in tiny houses? People are trying to find solutions here. But a lot of this comes back to just good old-fashioned bigotry against the poor. The proponents of these bans say, quote, homelessness is a choice. Yeah, that's it. That's it. The guy sleeping in the tent under the bridge chose that. He was thinking, you know, when I grow up, I'd like to sleep in a tent under a bridge in the rain, forage through garbage to try to find myself some food to survive. That's what I'd like. That's my choice. That's the way I want to live. There's actual data on this, you know. The Idaho House and Finance Association's 2024 State of Homelessness Report shows that the primary causes of homelessness in Idaho are domestic violence at 31%, loss of income or increased rent at 28%, and disabilities at 13%. So almost one of three people who end up on the streets without a home are there because of domestic violence. They're there because their spouse was beating the hell out of them. That was their choice, I guess. You could have stayed in a home and kept getting beat. Your homelessness was your choice, I guess. Loss of income or increased rent at 28%. So over a quarter, over one out of four people out there in the streets without a home had a home, but lost their job, got laid off. They're a government worker, got fired by DOGE. Or those landlords who don't have to accept Section 8 are raising the rent. And they don't have any competition from tiny homes being rented out to people. I guess that was their choice. That was your choice. If you didn't want to be homeless, well, Mike, you should have chosen to be rich. And then disabilities at 13%, one out of eight people experiencing homelessness are disabled. People choosing to be homeless, my God. The report also indicates that 78% of Idahoans experiencing homelessness in 2024 did so for the first time. They'd never been homeless before. Three out of four, more than three out of four, had never been homeless before. One of the most disgusting aspects of this descent into American fascism is the whitewashing of our American history. The administration has been going through with their Control F Doge boys, doing a search and replace on anything having to do with diversity, equity, and inclusion. The dreaded DEI, which is, again, the shortest way to spell the N-word. So what they've done here, the first bit that caught my attention was with respect to Charles C. Rogers, the highest ranking Black Medal of Honor recipient. Charles C. Rogers was awarded the Medal of Honor by President Nixon in 1970, but then his page was removed from the Department of Defense website. His profile was removed from the website, and this is part of all that DEI purge, because, of course, the mention on the website will mention that he is Black, the highest ranking Black service member to receive the Medal of Honor. And there's the word Black. Got to get rid of that. Okay, so you could see that as just, all right, that's just haphazard, sloppy work. We did a mass search and replace. We'll put the page back up. So they did. They went ahead and put the page back up. But when they did, if you looked at the URL for the page, you know, the www part, it reads www.defense.gov.gov/news/feature-stories/story/article/282-4721/, and then the name of the page. And most of the time on a website, when it generates that web page name, it'll be like the title of the page. Like, you know, The Radical Russ Show. You know, www.radicalrust.com/the-radicalrust-show. That kind of thing, right? So the title becomes, automatically becomes the URL, the website link. So their website link on a title, a page that was titled Medal of Honor Monday, Army Major General Charles Calvin Rogers. That was the title of that particular page. The URL said DEI Medal of Honor Monday, Army Major General Charles L. Yeah, they put the letters DEI in front of Medal of Honor winner as if it was a DEI Medal of Honor, as if he got the Medal of Honor just because he was black, not because he defended his platoon against repeated attacks by the North Vietnamese. Served with valor, got the highest congressional honor possible, the Medal of Honor, and they slapped DEI on the front of it. Now, to be fair, they fixed that since then. You go to the page now, the DEI is not there, but it was. They also removed an article on Jackie Robinson's military career. Jackie Robinson, the great baseball player who actually shares a birthday with I. That's right. Me and Jackie Robinson both born on January 31st. But Jackie Robinson, who integrated Major League Baseball, broke the color barrier, served in the U.S. Army during the Second World War. His article's gone. Other pages that were removed in this DEI purge? Ira Hayes. Ira Hayes was one of the Marines who was pictured raising the American flag at Iwo Jima during the Second World War. His page was removed because he's Native American. And speaking of Native Americans, an article about the Native American code talkers in World War II has been removed from military websites. You don't know that story. World War II, during World War II, of course, you got to send communications to your soldiers, your supplies and all that. And you have to encode them. You don't want the military of the enemy to know what you're doing, right? So the U.S. would put their stuff in code and send it off. Germans would do the same thing. They'd put their stuff in code and send it off. But the problem was the Germans were really good at breaking our codes. And the Germans had a code machine called Enigma. And there's a great movie about this. I forget the title of it, but it details Alan Turing and the scientists who worked to break the Nazi codes. He, of course, was gay, and after World War II was hounded over his homosexuality to the point where he was severely depressed. But anyway, they take Jackie Robinson down. They take down the Native American code talkers who, they were Navajo, who still spoke the Navajo language. And the Germans couldn't break that code, because it wasn't a code. It was just a language they'd never heard and had no reference to. And not like there's a whole lot of Navajo in Berlin to hell. There's not a whole lot of Navajo here that still speak Navajo. So that was a major breakthrough in our warfighting techniques in World War II. And a major reason why we were able to win World War II was the Navajo code talkers. And then they're taken down. They're whitewashed, erased from our history. Over 2,600 images, according to U.S. officials and the AP, over 26,000 images have been flagged for removal. They even removed reference to the Enola Gay. The Enola Gay, the aircraft that dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima, because it had the word gay in it. Similarly, there was an Army Corps of Engineers dredging project in California that was going to be deleted, this reference to it, because the local engineer in the photo had the last name Gay. There is another photo to be deleted from the Army Corps biologists about fish that had to be deleted because they were talking about the fish's gender. They even went so far as to delete photos of the Tuskegee Airmen, the nation's first black military pilots who served in World War II in a segregated unit. They just can't stand the idea of America being anything but white and delightsome. And to erase the sacrifices of black, native, gay, transgender, of anyone non-white, non-male from our history is such a disservice to what this country stands for, what we're supposed to be all about. That is our strength. The diversity is our strength. That the thing of these right-wingers going after DEI as if it's some sort of program, you know, their acronym for it is didn't earn it. What they want to believe is that DEI is, all right, well, we've got a board of directors and we got to have 10 people on the board of directors and 3 of them need to be black guys. That's all they need. That's all we need to know is that they're black guys, and it could be the clerk in the mailroom, but as long as it's a black guy, we'll make them on the board of directors. That's not what DEI is all about. What DEI is all about is making sure that the recruiting process is recruiting from all possible walks of life to get the best people. It's about not ignoring the 3 black guys that could make the board of directors because you put 3 white guys who were the Nepo babies of some other white guy in those positions. What they think DEI is the opposite of what it actually is. DEI is about finding the best people possible and reaching out to them and making sure they're included. When you look at something like the Republicans, where every single committee chair in the Congress this year is a white guy, do they really think that those are all the best possible people for the job? That's what they think. They think white guys are the default. And then if you're hiring somebody other than a white guy, it must be for some DEI reason. Must be because you're trying to fulfill a quota. It couldn't possibly be that the woman is good at the job, the black person is good at the job, the gay person is good at the job. What it reveals, and what white supremacy always reveals, is white inferiority. It's an inferiority complex. It's the feeling that if we don't dominate these people, they will take over because they're better than us. They're stronger than us. They're faster than us. They're better looking than us. They're smarter than us. That's the fear. You scratch the itch of any Nazi, of any white supremacist, any KKK member. That's really what it is an inferiority complex. People who are secure in their abilities, in their faith, people who are secure in their careers and their education aren't racist, aren't sexist, aren't homophobic or transphobic. People who are secure know that they're fine just the way they are and everybody else is fine just the way they are. Helping others doesn't hurt you. Conservatives see the whole world as a zero-sum game. I can't get ahead without someone else falling behind. I can't achieve something without taking it from someone else. They don't see cooperation and mutual aid, community, as being anything sort of beneficial. It's a cult of individuality. I got's mine. You're on your own. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Unless you're black, and then no matter how hard you pull your bootstraps, it was all DEI. I'm so tired of these people. Of the 30 to 36% of my fellow Americans who never escaped the Confederacy, who never got beyond colonialism, who long for the days of slavery. I am so tired of these people. Our biggest mistake in this country was after the Civil War, not executing the Confederate leaders and permanently disenfranchising every Confederate soldier. That was our mistake, thinking that we could reconcile with these people rather than cutting them out like the cancer they are. They are an anathema to everything that America is and should be. E pluribus unum. Let's get rid of "In God we trust." That's another big mistake we made too, is making our motto "In God we trust" instead of the original "E pluribus unum," from many one. We are a country of many that becomes a country of one if we all embrace each other and our diversity. I'm going to keep fighting any way I know how. Voting, ranting, writing. I hope you'll join me in the fight.
And it goes down smooth.
Well, that's it for today, folks. The Radical Russ Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and by VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalrus@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky as @radicalrus.com. And nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalrus.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music. See, I make mistakes. My website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.